Hello, everybody. Al Alcoholic.
Hi, Al.
Good to be with you this evening in the Blue Ridge Speakers group. And I was right here when it started with Billy and Sam. And they've carried on quite a legacy in this area. And my sobriety date is May 5th, 1987. For me, that's because Alcoholics Anonymous works under any and all conditions, if you can and if you will. I don't get me without you, and connection is critical here. And my fifth step's incomplete without yours, so I'm always looking for another fifth step. Mine by myself had an expiration date on it. It was exhilarating at first, but then it died out, so I needed to find yours. And in finding your fifth step, I learned more about me than I did on my fifth step. And that's why it's so important in the fellowship that we connect, and we connect on the concept of one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. That's what AA is built on. That's really what our longevity is built on. And many of us come in here from the clinical world. We come from the treatment centers or the psychiatrist couches or the counseling or and we have to learn our language. And our language is of simplicity. It's understandable. And every fellowship in the world has their own language. We're not the only ones. And we're always going to have vocabulary that comes into Alcoholics Anonymous that doesn't quite fit, but people may be suffering from that. But what we have to remember, what we have in common is being an alcoholic. The other things, and some of those are outside conditions and complications that somebody may legitimately have, but that's not our conversation because we all don't have that. That conversation belongs somewhere else. Words like childhood trauma come on in here and everybody grabs a hold of it. It looks like, yeah, that fits. It might, but it's not our language. Our language is suffering and pain and humiliation and self-pity and resentment and fear. We have our own language, self-delusion. I always like that one because I've suffered from that in and out of alcohol. When I was drunk and when I was, as I've been sober. Inner child came in with the same thing. We were here with the family dynamics and the inner child, and we had popular convention speakers beating that all over the country until it died out. We've had bipolar come in. We've had clinical depression come in. We've had attention deficit disorder come in, and many different things, hypoglycemia. And if you throw a blanket around a whole bunch of people, there'll be at least half that room will say, you know, I have those symptoms. And so what's important here is that what we share in our sponsorship and our home group and in our fellowship is what are the symptoms of the spiritual malady? And each person has to take a look at that. And unfortunately, the symptoms of a spiritual malady mimic the symptoms of a psychiatric disorder. Okay. And so this stuff takes time. I didn't get it overnight. What I'm going to share with you about my story and these things, I didn't get this overnight. Like, oh, yeah, flash came in. Let me tell you that. Okay, I've been sober for over 37 years. This is what my friend refers to as sobriety. Okay, and I'm going to be sharing how painfully slow this is sometimes. But I needed the connection with our language. And what Bill described our language was the language of the heart. There was a connection of one alcoholic talking to another. Most of us that are a child of the 60s or the post-60s, the Woodstock era, did a lot of other things. A lot of other things. But drug addiction is an outside issue. And you'll have people fall out of the sea. What are you talking about? Well, usually what I'm talking about can be brought up in documentation on page 17 or 18. They've changed it in the AA group pamphlet. It's in there. So all you have to do is look. I didn't make it. Singleness of purpose isn't just important today in our meetings, it's important for the longevity of Alcoholics Anonymous, because we're not everything to everybody. And when we try to do that, we fail at what we're trying to do. Okay. I, as a sponsor, I've never sent anybody to another fellowship, and I never sent anybody to anything outside of AA. If they want to do those things, I wouldn't be in an argument. I wouldn't be in a conflict. But I don't have that to know that's exactly what you need. If that's what you think you need, fine. My blessings. But I don't have that. I'm an AA guy, and I'm armed with the facts about alcoholism. And what does that look like? I mean, what when we start talking about alcoholism, and you'd be surprised how many people may not know what alcoholism is. And what is alcoholism? And the integrity we say is in our literature. Okay? That our founders and our pioneers of Alcoholics Anonymous, they carried this and they carried that message and put it down in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And one reason why they did that, so the message didn't get garbled, so you and I, many, 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 many years later, got what they were saying, and they put it down in there for us to take a look at. And so what I look at, when I start talking about my drinking, what I look about is, can I stop drinking? Oh, yeah. Any alcoholic can stop drinking. That's not a problem. The problem is I always start again, okay? Because I have an obsession of the mind. Okay? And that obsession becomes so powerful that it rules out everything else in my life but what our book lovingly refers to, and I do too, is King Alcohol, okay? The next thing is that I have a phenomenon of craving, a physical allergy, an abnormal reaction. When I put it in, all bets are off. In AA, we say the first drink gets us drunk, or we can't drink safely. So I look at it and I say, hey, is that true? Yes, that's true. Once I pop that top, all bets are off, I'm telling you. I might have had some good intentions, but they're all out the window. And do I suffer from a progressive illness, an illness that always gets worse but it doesn't get better, but I can't see it when I'm in it? I can see it when I look back. Do I suffer from a progressive illness that over the years did it get worse, or was I able to make it better? And my answer is no, it got worse. And what happens is that I end up in a hopeless condition. Now, that's the absolutely best shape that you can come in Alcoholics Anonymous, is a hopeless condition. I always say trouble brings you to AA, but it doesn't keep you. Okay? You have a better chance of staying here when your trouble is hopeless and there's no friendly direction. You're out of answers. And so when we say that your best thinking got you here and our thinking will help you stay here, we hear it rather than rebel against it. What hopelessness does for a guy like me, it softens me up for Alcoholics Anonymous. It softens me up for a power greater than myself. It softens me up for an inventory. It softens me up for taking amends. It softens me up for relying on a higher power. It softens me up. It's the thing that I really need now. When you're in it, that's the last thing, okay? And what Wilson described that was as a bottom. And a bottom is very important for a guy like me. Now, a bottom's not a place, I'll assure you that. Sometimes we think the bottom's the penitentiary or the bankruptcy or the divorce court. It's not any of that. The bottom is a place of having enough. And in May 5th, 1987, not knowing that I'd had enough. And in May 5th, 1987, I got a sobriety date and I wasn't even looking for it, because the first time I came to you about 5 or 6 years before that, I had a reservation. And the reservation was that I was going to drink again. I went to a meeting every day. I got a sponsor. I got to the fifth step. I stopped. I don't remember ever trying to help out my fellow alcoholic. I'm sure maybe I tried. I don't remember. I got a coffee commitment. And after 10 months, the reservation took over. I was on, when I first came in that 10 months, I was on food stamps. I lived in a broken down building with no plumbing. I've been kicked out of college. The parents weren't talking to me. You can keep checking the boxes. They were all there. I straightened up for 10 months, got a job, got off food stamps, everything. Parents started talking to me again, and I celebrated with a drink. I was off to the races again. Because once you pop the top on King Alcohol, all bets are off. Okay. We hear about us that make it back here. Oh, I got drunk and I made it back. I drank again. I made it back. I drank for 10 years. I made it back. I drank for 20 years. I made it back. I drank for 3 weeks. I made it back. But we don't hear from the people that And I sponsored a guy that some of you in here know, Billy Newen, Scotty. And Scotty drank himself to death last August in a hotel room in Detroit. He was found dead on the floor. And his wife, he had 4 years of sobriety with us. And his wife found him on the floor in that hotel room dead. He drank himself to death. I believe it's an accidental death. And Scotty loved us, but for some reason, Scotty couldn't completely give himself to a simple program, which is the admission price into Alcoholics Anonymous. I know he wanted to because he hung out with us all the time. He went to Las Vegas with us. He went to other places with us. He was always talking to us. He was trying to connect with us. But one thing that Scotty forgot, you don't pick up where he left off, is a progressive illness. He had been sober for 4 years. He was also 54 years old at this time. He wasn't a young kid anymore. I haven't seen the medical report on it, but I would take a guess that he either had a massive heart attack or he had a stroke. His wife said he went to the liquor store 5 times in 2 days. I understand that. I really do. Because once you pop the top on King Alcohol, all bets are off. We laugh here. Oh, yeah. And we should laugh. But some of it's not a laughing matter. And the problem with alcoholism is the folks like me that have it underestimate how powerful is. And that can put you in a lot of trouble. And we've all seen it. Just like me, when I came in with those 10 months, I started to get the things that AA was telling me I could get. And those were the things that I decided that took me back out. And that's what we say here, that success could be one of the biggest enemies of an alcoholic. Is you get so successful here, you forget where you came from. One thing I hope that we don't lose the hope in our stories that we tell here. And some of us tell it better than others. And some of us have a more horrendous story than others. And I used to love the horrendous stories, And we are a society of storytellers. Okay? And in those stories, I believe that hope is born and recovery is born from a hopeless condition. That I have a me too moment. That, yeah, I am like you. I just got de-uniqued. What do I need to do? I no longer have any resistance. Dr. Silkworth wrote an article in the Grapevine. He talked about a human condition. The relapse was more of a human condition than just an alcoholic condition. And it's a good article to read. And he said, simply, when it boils down to it, they didn't follow directions. It wasn't a psychotic state of mind. They didn't follow directions. And boy, when we've been here for a while, we certainly can see that that's true. I'll do it my way. But in these stories, the hope's born. And we were talking a little bit before the meeting about one of my friends. I want to tell you about some of these stories that really got my attention. Some when I was newer, and some as I've been older in Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of my friends was a Navy SEAL in Vietnam, and he got all shot up and he got blown up. And he was in a river for 3 days, and they finally, the US military finally got him out of the river. And he ended up back in Norfolk, and he's in really, really bad shape. He said, I had every psychiatric ailment that you would have coming out of a war zone. And he said, I really never thought I'd get better. He said, I was in the VA hospitals all the time, and it was just, it was, he said, every day I thought about taking my life. And he said, then he got into Alcoholics Anonymous by a friend in the military. He said, I got a sponsor and I took the steps. He said, I became an active AA member. He said, you know, Al, I'm not making this up. Every one of those psychiatric disorders and symptoms that they had me in the VA hospital were gone. I'm not saying that's for everybody, but when I hear that, it's like, my gosh. Chuck Chamberlain used to say, there's enough power in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to blow us right out of here. You know, my other friend was Frank, and Frank was a Vietnam sniper in the Marine Corps. He took out a lot of people. He hurt a lot of people. And when he came back, he was nothing but angry. And he had a rage that he was ready to kill. And he's not going to tell me, but I think that he killed some people. He joined the LAPD, and he was in bad shape. And Clancy got a hold of him. And he sent him back to Vietnam in the later 70s, after the war was over, to make amends to the prostitutes and the pimps and the taxi drivers and the people that he hurt, the people he built, beat up, and the people he stole from. And he went around, he said, you'd be surprised how many people recognize me. He said, I was a real troublemaker in those bars. He said, I went in there, I made amends with money. I did what Clancy told me to do. He said, Clancy told me to go back to the Gulf War in 1991. I needed to volunteer for that war and be a good soldier this time, and that's what I did. He was a man's man. He was one of the great examples of Alcoholics Anonymous that I had ever seen at that point, the way he carried himself, the way he talked about things. He just had that, and it all was a result of the type of sponsorship he had and getting into the steps and getting active member in AA. And when I say active member of AA, that's different than some other. In my area, it's popular the don't drink and go to meetings culture. It's all over the place. And you know what? I have some good friends in there. I'm not in conflict with that. But I'm telling you that I'm a guy that suffers from the inside with this internal conflict called alcoholism. And I need a little bit more than that. I'm one of the alcoholics that need to have everything that AA offers Just because I'm 37 years sober doesn't mean I've outgrown being an active member. I'm still in a meeting every day. I still have a sponsor that I accept direction from and that I call. I still have a home group and a business meeting, and I have a job in that home group. I still work with other alcoholics. And I've strengthened in my awareness on this higher power, or God as we understand him, especially in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, more than ever. I can't afford not to be because of the way I'm wired. I can't afford it. I can't afford half measures here. I just can't afford it. I had another friend, Cricket Robertson, out of Dallas, Texas. She's dead too. Big meeting in the sky. And she used to tell the story that she was a sharecropper's daughter at 14 years old. She left and lived on the streets as a prostitute and went from mental institution to mental institution, from shock therapy to shock therapy. And it really messed with her wiring in her brain. And finally, she ended up in Dallas as a young street prostitute that was a psychiatric diagnosis, she says, with everything, and joined Alcoholics Anonymous and took the steps and got a sponsor and got into an active home group, and everything changed for her. She said some of the shock treatments, she never, they were still there. But she had a life that she never ever had dreamed of because of what we do here with each other. And the basis of one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. There's a chemistry that happens here. And some of my friends call it magic. I'm not sure that's the right word. I don't know if this is magic. But something happens here. Something changes the inside. Something shakes out. The spiritual awakening is so powerful that it changes people so utterly they don't recognize themselves, neither do you. It's a powerful experience, and that's what we share when we come up here. We share those experiences, and we share other people's experience, people that have impacts on our life also. Had another lady in our area in Richmond. She was in a mental institution most of her life. In fact, she had a legal certified diagnosis as a psychiatric patient with mental illness, and she said 5 to 6 other diagnoses on that. And she got a sponsor in Richmond who brought her the big book unwillingly, and she had a lot of resistance. And finally, after 2 years, she gave in. She took the steps, she became active, she started working with other people, she got a higher power, she got a sponsor, she got a home group. Check all the boxes. And every one of those psychiatric diagnoses, she said, went away. Everything they were doing, she said, I no longer needed that assistance. Unfortunately, she forgot where she came, and as her life got more successful, she got more inactive here, and she ended up taking her life. So those stories are here too, and they're all important stories. None of them are wasted because nothing's wasted in God's economy. Know, I've had a good run here, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to share this. This idea of slow sobriety, this idea of there's no quick fixes here. I was a guy when I was 4 or 5 years sober. I was in a lot of financial trouble. I needed to get sober financially. I just spent more money than I made, and I was in a tremendous amount of debt. And I think one of our concepts here is a life changer for a lot of us is asking for help. And I asked for help for a guy that was well off. He had more money than I'll ever see in a lifetime. He wore jackets in the winter that had duct tape on the holes. And he was just the type of guy I needed. And he said I'd help him if I'd be willing to go along with him and if I did everything he asked me to do. And I learned that in AA and I brought that into that relationship. And I said, yeah. And I was about $28,000 in debt and getting more in debt. And it was absolutely pitiful. And I got out of debt with his help and being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got financially sober. And when you get financially sober, one thing that happens is that the fear is gone. Can I pay my bills? Can I pay the credit cards coming in, and they're going to bounce a check. And I went through all that. And I didn't have a fear anymore. In fact, I got a peace of mind. And it happened right here. And I ended up, the two people that fired me from the job and on May 5th, 1987, I was technically fired and put on probation. 10 years later, we went into business with each other. I started a business in my mind. I was the originator of it, and I asked them to come in, and they had no doubt coming in with me. You should have seen them how they were treating me when I was drinking. I avoided them at all costs, I'll assure you that. And we went into business, and I was married and bought property and built a big house. I say now I built my ego. I wish I had downsized back then, but that's what happens sometimes. And had everything paid for and everything looking good. Tell you the truth. Except I think Wilson was onto it when he talked about lacking emotional sobriety. And when he wrote that to a person in 1953, and that was published in the Grapevine in 1958. And he also put in the 12 and 12 when it starts out the 12th step of emotional sobriety. It's the first time we start seeing this word used in our language and our vocabulary. And he talks about these hobbling handicaps that we have, these false dependencies that we have on money or on people or on prestige, applause. And I thought, yeah, I got you, Bill. I understand that. And Bill went through the 1940s in serious, what he called black moods, sobbing and crying. But we got to also remember in the 1940s, while Bill was doing that and having a very hard time, he's also giving us traditions and concepts that he gets us in the Saturday Evening Post, 1941. We start looking at all his accomplishments while he's crying on the table. And so once he gets into the 1950s, a lot of this stuff starts clearing up. And to me, I understand. And part of my story is this. I got burned out and stressed as I start to tell you that. I mean, I got severely burned out. I understand Bill Wilson more than ever because of my own experience in sobriety. And so he wrote this that's become famous in AA, Emotional Sobriety, The Next Frontier. And he pinpoints that his immaturity, his false dependencies, and the fact he needed to grow up and he needed to learn how to give to other people for free and for fun. He needed to learn how to love. He needed to learn these things and practice these things in his life. And he said he got free of it. He got free of it. That's what he reports to us, that he got free of those things. But I was way behind Bill Wilson, didn't know much about it till I bumped into it. And so when we were hungry in our business and we were all together and wondered if we would survive from week to week, we were united. But once we started to make some money and started becoming successful, problems started to happen. We started to disagree with each other a lot. If you looked in, I love the 10 step in the big, in the 12 and 12. I think it's just an absolute beauty. It describes me. Silent scorn. That's punishing people without them knowing about it. Or maybe they did. So I silent scorned my partners for 5 years. Okay. And I went home and I had resentments for those 5 years on and off. I'm not saying every day, but they were there. I had a lot of fear because my pocketbook was getting hit. And I knew that our business was in trouble. And one of my defects come up in fear is ignoring things and hoping they get better. It hasn't worked for me yet, but I will try it again, okay? I will try that again. And my wife started drinking at 21 years of sobriety, and we had a kid in the house. And from this life that seemed to be in a fairy tale book, AA member makes good in society, all of a sudden the bottom falls out. And I go right down what I call the black hole. And I was chasing dollars all the way down there because I had put my dependence on my bank account rather than God. I put my dependence in a marriage rather than on God. I put my dependence on my business rather than God. And most of all, I'd put my dependence on me rather than God. And I ended up severely unhappy. And I got to the point that I was so, and I didn't know this at the time, I was so burned out. And when I went down that dark hole, I stayed there for about 18 months. And I was sobbing on tables like Bill Wilson. And I thought about suicide on a daily basis. But instead, my sponsor told me to go to the meet and try to help somebody. I said I didn't feel like doing that. He said I didn't ask you if you felt like it. I told you to go do it, and I did. I was able to follow directions when I really didn't feel like following directions, and I didn't want to follow directions. In fact, one time he asked me when I called him, I was in one of my blackouts or dark outs, sobbing. He says, "Is your home group enthusiastic, and what are you doing to do that, help them out?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about? Did you hear what I just shared with you?" But I needed that. I needed those little distractions. And I would say, "What do I need to do?" And he says, "The answer is all more Alcoholics Anonymous." He said, "Al, it's always more Alcoholics Anonymous." And that doesn't just mean more meetings. That means check all the boxes. And what all spiritual movements and religious movements have always said, I think, in the test of time, that the main problem of the human condition is selfishness and fear. And when we look in our steps, we see a solution to that. Clancy always said that the plight of the alcoholic in sobriety, the things that we come up against that really take us to the cleaner, is anxiety and depression. And then we say the spiritual principles are the solution to all our problems. And here's the problem for the alcoholic. It doesn't look like it. That's the problem. I'm different. It doesn't look like it. And the other problem is it takes too much time. Okay? You don't know how many times I've heard this recently in the last year from folks that have some time or don't have some time. They're in some difficulties in life, whether it's financial or marital. We all go through difficulties. And a lot of times it's similar. People have been through the marital problems here, have been through financial problems here. Not everybody. Emotional problems, whatever. That we think that, okay, for 3 weeks, I've been going to meetings every day. I've been doing this. I've been increasing my prayer and meditation. I've been trying to help out other alcoholics. I took on another coffee commitment. I've been, I feel worse. And what we say, stay the course. Well, it's been a year and a half later. I was working with one of my friends. He was 38 years sober, and he went into one of the, he went down that black hole too. And thank God I had that experience. See, nothing's wasted in God's economy. That what God takes is the worst in us and comes out to help you out. I would have never guessed that when I was down in the dark hole. But now, you know, I can't tell you how many people come up to me afterwards, say, "Can I talk to you? Do you mind if I call you? You know, whatever." I'm like, "Sure. My life's open to you." And he's really suffering, year and a half into it. He goes, "I don't think this is ever going to get any better." I said, "I know, that's the voice of hopelessness. That's what happens." He said, "How long do you think it'll take?" I said, "Well, for me, I came out of about after 6 years." He goes, "6 years?" I said, "Yeah, this is an overnight fix. I mean, stay the course, buddy." And he came out of it. I said, "See, it was about 2.5 years." And he's more effective than he's ever been in AA. More effective. So, of course. Because Bill said pain is the touchstone of all spiritual progress. Now, none of us want to, I don't want to go back there. I'm not telling you that. I really like enjoying life, okay? I do. I bike. I do a lot of fun things, okay? Yesterday, and I'm an old deadhead coming out of the 60s. We all got integrated into the Grateful Dead. And I mean, deadhead, you know, obsessive. And the other day I put on AC/DC's first album, and I was just so blown away by it. I'm going down there, and I'm not even, I'm like, this is a masterpiece. And I just have those moments that are just fabulous, you know. And then today I put in ZZ Top's second album, and I just, first album, fell in love with it again after I biked for a while. And what my sponsor always says is that we need not to forget that we absolutely insist on enjoying life. And I thought that was a feeling. See, that's my problem as being a self-centered person. I think everything's attached to a feeling. okay, I need to feel spiritual. Well, what does that feel like? Well, I come up in my mind what it is, and if it's not there, I don't think I'm feeling spiritual. I need to be more loving. So I think, oh, well, I'm falling short there. I don't feel loving enough. And so I get in my mind about what these emotions need to look like and feel like. And if they don't look like and feel like that, I may not be doing this right. No. AA is an action program. And my friend in Louisville always said that it's not what I think, it's not what I feel, it's not what I believe, it's what I do, and I like to add in what I don't do. And thank God for that. Because if I'm looking for a certain emotion, and happiness is another one, oh my God, I'm not happy enough. That person said they were happy. I don't feel like them. Well, maybe I can act happy. These things started making sense to me. Maybe I can act loving. It says love and tolerance is our code, and I used to think, when's it going to come to me? Because I don't feel that way. And you said that's an action, not a feeling. I got it. I can act loving and tolerant, and I don't have to always feel that way. I can do the right thing for the wrong reasons, and it's still the right thing. And that's what I was like. I was always looking for motives. You know, you hear that a lot. Let me look at your motives. I could get too lost in that and too self-obsessed. And one of the problems of the alcoholic is overthinking. Okay? We come up with these beautiful ideas and then we think about it all night. Well, we don't have enough. It's not the right kind. I didn't do this. And it doesn't really help us. I had a friend tell me in simple terms, he spoke simple language that I could understand it. He says, it is what it is and it ain't what it I had to think about that all night. What do you mean by that? So when it comes down to it, and Billy, do you have the time? Thank you. One time I looked at the clock and it wasn't right. And the audience was starting to get restless.
6:40.
Thank you. So I came out of the black hole just when COVID had hit. Just, I think it was the timing of it. I started to come out of it. And I was in a meeting in Charlottesville. It was 7 a.m. in the morning. This guy was talking about being online at a meeting. And I thought, this is the worst thing I've ever heard. Online. That's not an AA meeting. And I was very negative, as many of my friends have been, and some still are. And again, I'm not in any conflict. If that's the way they see it, that's the way they see it. So I started going to these meetings because in my area, in Buckingham and Charlottesville, everything shut down. I mean, here and there was a lone wolf that the church let them stay in there, but everywhere else, it was done. Our meeting was done. We had to do it in our front yard all through that spring and summer before the church let us come back in. And I thought, this is the worst. This is the worst thing that could happen to AA. You remember my friend in Colorado always said that God's plan is better than yours. And it's also bigger. As the third step says, what we're crippled by is little plans and designs. But the problem is that I always think my plan is the right plan, and it's not little, it's big. And that's why I put a lot of emphasis today, more than I ever have in my sobriety, on the concept of letting go and letting God. People say, let go and God, let go and let God do what? Anything God would want to do. And one way that I do that now that I didn't do before is give up all favorable results. Okay, God, I'm going to pray, but I really want it to work out this way. Hard not to sometimes, but let it go. And AA turns into a daily surrender, is what it does. And that surrender, a big part of that surrender is letting go and letting God. And so I started going to these meetings. I didn't like it, but I didn't have anywhere else to go. I've always been a guy who went to a meeting on a daily basis. It's never been a chore for me. I've always enjoyed it. I haven't let things get in the way of it. And I've had all the things that get in the way of it in my life. And I said one day, Al, you got to bloom where you're planted. Okay. You got to make this work. And all of a sudden I met this person, that person. I'm in Edmond, Canada, and we're out in California, and then we're in South Africa, and then we're in Iran, and then we're in Russia, and then I'm going all places I've never seen, probably will never be in a lifetime. I've just never been a world traveler. And all of a sudden I'm there, I'm meeting people. I got a friend in Poland, I got a friend in Las Vegas, and I got a friend over here, and a friend there, and a friend, 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 friend. And all of a sudden, for the first time in my sobriety, I had a peer group, and I'd never had a peer group ever. And I just learned to live. And I have a peer group of people that had 37, 38, 40, 41, 42, 34, 32, whatever. But I had a peer group all of a sudden that we started to become friends. And we started to talk to each other on the phone, and we started to get to know each other. I changed sponsorship. I have no conflict with my other sponsor. We're just kind of going in two different directions. He's a good AA member. He's a good man. I'm not here to criticize that, but I moved in a different direction. I found another sponsor. I found a sponsor that I can sit in weekly in meetings, which I've never done in my life. I've always had an out-of-town sponsor. And I get to do that online. And then we got into the three legacies, and we got into the history, and we started to see the three legacies were incomplete without the history. And we started opening up AA Comes of Age. And my sponsor in Minnesota, he's the one that introduced it. He said, why don't we look at AA Comes of Age, and why don't we start a meeting online? And I thought, yeah, I'm not going to read it by myself. And we've been at it for 3 years now, and we're only about halfway, three quarters through it. We got another year and a half. I mean, we're slow. We've learned that book so well, it's unbelievable. And we started to learn the histories, and we started to look at things. And we started to look at the AA group pamphlet. We started to study the pamphlet. And stuff that I really have always wanted to do, but I never did, but all of a sudden it started happening. What happened was my sobriety jumped from a one legacy to a three legacy sobriety. And what Bill called that was a wide angle view of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it changed everything in AA for me. And the friendships that I developed. Because a lot of the people that inspired me and I got close to, like Clancy and the original Joe and Charlie and Tom and Sandy, and we can make a list of them. I think Johnny's the only one still walking. But my friend Larry tells me they have to put him in a golf cart quite a bit. But he's there. The rest of them in the big meeting in the sky. And all of a sudden, I have a new fellowship around me of active AA members, and that would have never happened if it hadn't been for the online participation. Now, I also know on the other side, I've got some friends that won't do it. They don't see any need of it. And like I said, the more I stay out of those conflicts, the better it is for me. And I've learned to do that more and more. That when there's a hornet's nest, and the hornet's nest always starts with, I'm right, you're wrong. And the best thing to do with the hornet's nest is get away from the hornets because they sting. Because once you get in the hornet's nest, you're going to get stung. All right. And I'm right, you're wrong. It only ends up usually in an argument where nobody wins. And if I can surrender that, you know, I like to talk about more and more this daily surrender in Alcoholics Anonymous, that it's not a one and done. We used to say, I can't live today on yesterday's program, and there's a lot of truth in that. I like to say, I can't live today on yesterday's surrender. I got to wake up again today and do the same things. Because it's always surrendering self. Always. And it's there. I'm not out of the woods. Maybe you are. I'm an everyday AA member with everyday problems. I haven't grown past a lot of them. I don't have the dark hole anymore. My wife and I are back in the same house. The kid's happy again. We get along. That doesn't mean that we still don't have our ups and downs. We do. Marriages sometimes are ups and downs. They're not all a perfect picture. Yet I have had some friends that it almost looks perfect to me. I like what my friend, if you want a perfect relationship, look out the window to the next door neighbor. It's not in our house. But we have a sober house. And we have a sober house based on the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, where as human beings, we fall short of that sometimes. Okay? But that's what I have a sponsor for. I call a sponsor and I ask them for direction. What do I need to do? That's what I have meetings for, to go to meetings. And, you know, meetings for me are not a place that I come and I dump my problems. I'm not saying a person doesn't from time to time need to do that. But what I was taught in AA that really helped me out was that you share your problems with your sponsor and you bring the solution to the group. That doesn't mean you can't share that, hey, I was unhappy today. Sure you can, because somebody else is unhappy in that meeting. But also you're telling them, what am I doing about my unhappiness? And that's what's important. That we're not only carrying the problem, we're also carrying a solution, because most of us are defective, okay? And we need each other. And we need to hear, hey, I screwed up today, okay? I stole the Tootsie Roll out of the Walmart. And the guy in the meeting said, take the Tootsie Roll back, or if you ate it, go back and pay it back. And I need to hear that, okay? I was in Las Vegas a couple years ago, and there's a speaker that I'm very fond of, and they had a shoplifting problem well into sobriety, 20 years. I'm not saying they did it every day, but they shoplifted. Okay. And they were sharing that they had a shoplifting problem at 20 years of sobriety. And the person next to me said, how dare they talk about that? That's not sobriety. And I thought, you missed the point, man. She just saved somebody in the audience that shoplifting at later times of sobriety. That person might go and tell their sponsor, where before they weren't doing that. And that's what we do for each other. We don't know what doors we open up when we share. We don't know there's a person in there that's suffering in here. And all of a sudden the door opens and the light comes on. They go, yeah, I need to share this with my sponsor. I've kept that and it's a secret I got. You need to get that out. Okay. But this is sobriety. This doesn't happen in one sitting or one meeting or 20 or 30 or 100 meetings. This happens over periods of time. And sometimes we're going to suffer here. And I think it's okay, because I think that God accepts the pitiful. Because sometimes the very best I've done in AA, I've got to a meeting with my shoes tied and I haven't taken a drink today, before all the other stuff that I'm supposed to be doing catches back up with me. And I'll end with this story. And it'll be about Dale. Everybody knows Dale. We all love Dale. Okay. And Dale came over to my house periodically, and he tells this story. I'm not telling anything that Dale hasn't told. And he was drunk in a cabin and got sober for a while. He came over to the Buckingham group. I think he stayed sober about 2 years and got drunk again. And he showed me where he was living. He was living in a trailer where I think the bushes were growing up through the floors. And Dale was over there drinking. He was drinking himself to death. And Dale came back out of the trailer one day, because I always told him, my door is always open. You know, I can't believe sometimes a sponsor is yelling at somebody that drank it. And I see no good purpose in that. I mean, what somebody told me is, don't be shocked that somebody drinks around here. Be shocked that they stay sober. I like what my friend Dick said out of Baltimore. He's the one that said that. Billy knows it. So Dale came back, and he'd been through the steps with Sam and probably Billy and everybody in the Blue Ridge group and me at least two times. And I think that Dale had enough information to keep himself sober and everybody in this room the rest of his life, because Dale's smart. He retains this, okay? And he said to me that day, he said, Al, would you take me back through the steps? I said, absolutely not. You've been through them enough times. I said, what you're missing is continue. And continue is one of the biggest words we have in our steps. We continue to do this. And a light bulb turned on that day, and Dale goes, you're right. I need to continue. And I said, yes. And what are we continuing? We're continuing the steps in our life, in steps 10, 11, and 12. I think they all come and live in there. And the one thing that I think that we forget that I think is more and more important to me, and as I stay sober, these things become more important. You know, for a while you can share them in meetings and share them in meetings and know the right things to share them, should be sharing them. Other people need to hear them. But all of a sudden they have depth and weight, and that's practice these principles in all our affairs. I saw that for years in that step. I could tell you about it. But then it hit home. And I like in the 10th step that it says, this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. It's not an overnight matter to grow in depth and understanding. We have to go through it. And it's not an overnight matter. And when I saw practice these principles on all our affairs, I thought, that's right. Spiritual principles are the answer to all my problems. It doesn't look like. And why are spiritual principles the answer to all of my problems? Because what I start to find out that all my problems are spiritual. My friend in Baltimore used to say, what part of water isn't wet? It was simple. And I always remember that. And when I went to him one time in a turmoil, and I'll leave you with this, and I was really struggling with something, I can't remember it now, but at the time it was very important. I said, well, what do I need to do here, Tom? You know Tom Flynn. We all know Tom Flynn. He said, you know, he had this big Irish laugh, and he says, you need to find a God bigger than you. I said, I need to find a God bigger than me? He said, yeah, I'll take care of the problem. I said, Tom, how do I do that? He said, that's what the actions of AA are about, to enable us to find a power greater than ourselves that will solve our problem. Thank you for asking me. And thank you, Billy. And Billy has 20.